Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
I planted a tree that eats other trees. It is a California oak wood. It's a giant 9.5 feet tall tree. When you plant it, it grows to 462 feet. Also, I bought a coal-burning toaster. Yeah, we're spending way too much on electricity. Why not invest in coal to use your toaster? It takes like, 96 pieces of coal to, toast a bagel, half a bagel. You got to flip it. So I'm not good at math, but, a little less than 200 pieces to toast the full thing.
But it's a delicious bagel. Oh. Once it's got the taste of coal
You get the smoky flavor of coal up in that bagel. You throw in a little schmear.
It's like eating a burger, like a cookout burger, without the meat or the cheese or any of the condiments that normally you remember in a cookout burger.
And then, throw some gasoline on it, and then you got your taste.
Yeah.
Delicious. Delicious.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by Espoma, the leader in natural gardening solutions since 1929. And by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. If you can't find him on Facebook, it's because he's got a paper bag over his head. Here he is, Mike Novak.
One more time. Good morning on Sunday, the 8th of August. We got a show. Well, that's unusual for me because we're actually going to be giving out information. I do that sometimes. I actually do. You know, it's kind of funny, though. We don't have Heather Fry in studio today. We have Green Correspondent. And we need a different title for you. Leah Petrusiak.
In the Green Reporter.
And she is green.
It's that makeup from last night.
It's not. How late were you out last night? Because I know Heather, to do her show prep, usually stays out to 2 or 3, and then deals with her son and then comes in on Sunday morning.
Oh, my gosh.
Doesn't she?
Yeah, she's it's a little busy bee mom.
She is a busy bee.
I think she flies her. I think she's part bird.
She has more energy than any 20 people you and I know. it's just the truth. And I don't know if she's listening now. Actually, I think she might be. She's sleeping.
I'm telling you,
because she's getting ready to go up to the North Woods.
She's on vacay.
Totally. And the question I asked Mike Sanders when I walked in, and I heard earlier today on his program, him talking about stealing my tomatoes out back, but that's okay.
He's going to throw them at you later.
He's welcome to steal them. There's so many. However, we had a loss this week. Bow your head. R.I.P. our zucchini plant.
Oh,
faithful zucchini bit the dust.
Oh, no.
It never made it in the earth box. It got that powdery mildew, and it was all over.
Because
as I mentioned before, I'm giving out information on this show, which is an unusual thing for me. Maurice Agutu... PhD, extension educator, fruits and vegetable guy from Illinois Extension, is on the show to start. As a matter of fact, why don't we get him online? I'll let you take care of that. But before you do, can you pop up that Twitter page with the mentions? Because it's funny that the Twittersphere.
The Twittersphere.
Has, you know, before my show, people start writing stuff, and I like that. It gives me anticipation that we're going to have folks listening. Beth Botts, who is at Chicago Gardener, she writes Mike Novak is on WCPT. Little station that sometimes could. Not exactly like listening to Larry Lujack on WLS back in the day. Animal stories. I don't have any animal stories. I might come up with them. Hey, I think that was a backhanded compliment. Thanks, Beth. And we also had Zamboni's written this morning. She's digging plants and working at the Peterson Garden while she listens. Beth also wrote that she realized her portable AM radio she used for Sox games can be used to listen to my show on the CTA. You just figured that out, huh, Beth? I ain't no Larry Lujack, but you ain't no rocket scientist either. So it's nice to see people tweeting. Have we got Maurice on the line there, Lee? Okay, yeah, it sure looks like it. And line one is ringing. That's what that means. You got to understand, Leah's fairly new to this, so you got to cut her some slack this morning if you're calling in. All right, but let us immediately and without further ado go to line two. And I believe Maurice, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Good morning, Maurice. How are you?
I'm fine.
Tell me how you pronounce your last name.
My last name is Ogutu. G like George, U-T-U.
Oh, I know how to spell it. You're up on my website, including a picture.
Yes.
You are the fruits and vegetables guy for Illinois Extension operating out of the Countryside office, and I very much appreciate having you on the show this morning.
Okay.
I'm going to remind listeners for the next few minutes, we're going to be talking about vegetables and some things going on with vegetables this year in northern Illinois, around Chicago, and maybe elsewhere, but mostly here. If you have a question, 773-838-WCPT, 773-838-9278. This is your chance, like I said, it's information on the Mike Novak Show with Maurice Ogutu. Maurice, I want to start with something that I posted last night on Twitter and on Facebook before I went to bed, because I was doing it on the show, and I already had folks say, oh, I'm so glad you're asking that question, because they've been trying to figure out the answer to it. And it is, you know, in northern Illinois, Iowa, parts of Wisconsin, we had some terrible, terrible flooding in the past couple of weeks. And some gardens got drowned. They were covered in water. This started actually because a friend of the show, Dan Costa, wrote, and this is the letter he wrote. He said, in my garden, all the veggies were underwater for 3 days, and they're all dead and rotted. I will not be replanting, but I will get things from local farmers markets. I estimate 80 to 85% of the plants in my garden are dead or severely injured by the flood. He had 4 feet of water in the garden as well as 4 feet in the basement. Yikes. He said it's depressing. The smell of rot is everywhere. Even plants that like moisture are dead or dying. And the one thing he says, I'm giving up on gardening. Now, I don't think Dan will, because I know him, and he's a good guy, and he's a good gardener. But the question he asked was, with this flooding and with your vegetables underwater, even for a short time, do people need to be concerned about pathogens that might be in the soil or might have attached themselves to the plants.
Yes. They need to be concerned because the flood water may be contaminated with sewage, animal waste, heavy metals, pathogenic organisms, or other contaminants. And the contaminants may be deposited on the surface of the vegetables, and some may move into the plant tissues. So you need to be more concerned about that.
Okay, so it's not necessarily going to be good enough to just wash the vegetables, because you're saying some of the contaminants might have gotten into the tissues themselves.
Yes.
Now, how does one determine whether one's vegetables are at risk? How do you know if the water that has gone into your yard has contaminated your vegetables? Do you do a test, or is there some rule of thumb?
No, because the source of the flooding water is very, very important because, the rainwater or water from other contaminated sources like potable water that is used in household, that one is clean. It's not a big, big problem. But the water from river, septic field, or other potentially contaminated sources, those are the ones that have some pathogens. And also, floodwaters can be contaminated with sewage or industrial pollutants. And I said raw sewage or animal waste may contain bacteria that can cause illness if contaminated vegetables are eaten. And also floodwater covering roads, vehicles, dump sites, factories, manufacturing and other business sites can also carry heavy metals and other industrial contaminants. So I think based on that, maybe you did not know the source of the flooding water, but it may come from either of these sources that I've described.
It sounds like that's a possibility, and what I think you're saying is that you should probably err on the side of caution.
Yes.
Which means that if your garden got flooded, you probably, like Dan, want to toss those vegetables. Now, let's say you do toss the vegetables and you give up. Well, let me ask you a question about that, because there are different kinds of vegetables. So let's say you have beans and the plant manages to survive. It doesn't get completely drowned out and it's producing fruit at the end of a vine. Is that still a problem?
Yes, like if those fruits were on the plant by the time the plants were drowned or were flooded, then some of the contaminants may go into the fruit. So it still poses a problem. And if the plant survive, then it is advisable to remove those fruits from the plant, then the new flowers that come up later, those are the ones that can develop into fruits or pods that can be picked.
So if you have plants that have fruiting bodies and as you say, when the fruits had developed before the flood, you should remove those fruits, but you don't see a problem with new fruits developing.
Yes, new fruits developing, that ones will be fine. But even the new fruits that developed, it's very, very important that you wash them and also cook them thoroughly, because some of the pathogen or contaminants may still be sticking either on the shoots or other parts of the plant that may get into the fruits.
Mm.
Yes.
Well, I can see why Dan thinks that his summer's ruined, because obviously he's got nothing left. And it sounds like other people who have gardens are going to have the same problem and are going to have to destroy a lot of their crops. Have you gotten a lot of phone calls about this sort of thing?
Yes, I've got some phone calls about flooding. But I think most of the flooding that occurred mainly in the urban areas. So maybe, and very few people have been calling me about vegetable gardens.
Uh-huh. Well, Dan lives in Westchester, and apparently they got hammered out that way by the flooding. He had an extensive vegetable garden. And other people wrote to me and wanted to know about that. Now, of course, I live in the city as well, and I didn't have that problem there. I'm so happy that I was spared that agony. Let me ask one more question before I take a quick break, and that is, let's say you did have that contamination, you had flood waters, you're not sure whether there were pathogens in the flood waters, you're thinking about getting the garden going again, you know, now that it's drained. What considerations do you have for the soil? Is there a way you can remediate the soil?
Yes. I think what needs to be done is to take a soil test. But the soil test that is done in the regular soil testing labs may not show that there are some contaminants in the soil, like heavy metals. So what I suggest is that after the ground has dried out, before you plant another crop, it's good to add some compost or other organic matter onto that site. Then you till the soil 5 to 6 inch deep.
So you add compost, till 5 to 6 inch deep. I want to go back to you saying that the soil test can't tell you whether there's pathogens. Is there any kind of soil test that can do that for you?
No. There are some labs that can do that, can try to look for some pathogens or some contaminants like heavy metals, but it's more expensive. And also, as you see, like when there's flooding, then there are pathogens in the soil. Then after drying out, most of those pathogens are dead, because I think with the light and other stuff, light and also that drying out kills most of the pathogens that are harmful.
And I would think then as you mix in compost, you're also exposing them to the light and drying out even more, and it should make the garden safe to plant again.
Yes, and also, you know, with the compost and other organic matter, they have like a buffering capacity that if there are some heavy metals in the soil, some of them can be binded by compost. Those organic matter, so they are not really going to be taken.
Oh, good point. Some of those, they are bound up by the organic matter. That's a good thing. We're talking to Maurice Ogutu. He's the extension educator out of the Countryside Center. He's an expert on fruits and vegetables. We got a couple of calls here. I'm going to get to those in a second. Maurice, can you hold on for a few more minutes with us?
Yes.
Thank you so much. Of course, you want your flowers to bloom like crazy, and one of the best ways to do that is to feed your flowers organic food, and your best bet in the field is Flower Tone from Espoma. Flower Tone is a premium flower food that's low in nitrogen and rich in potash to promote root growth and blooms rather than heavy foliage, and the natural organics in Flower Tone break down gradually. This gives your flowers access to a safe, long-lasting food reservoir throughout the growing season. Flower Tone from Espoma is formulated to feed annuals and perennials, and its natural formula also contains Biotone, which is a patented blend of beneficial microbes which help improve soil structure. Espoma is the maker of Holly Tone, Plant Tone, and other organic plant foods. If the word tone is in the name, you know it's made by Espoma. Look for all of the Espoma products at your local garden center. For more information about Espoma natural gardening solutions, call 888-ESPOMA1 or visit espoma.com. ESPOMA.com. Espoma, the leader in natural gardening solutions since 1929.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687, for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Don't look now, but it's August. Next week is Christmas, unless my math is off. I guess I'd better start my harvest. But if you don't want the dog days of summer drooling all over you, well, there's a pretty mental picture. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is the answer. The July-August issue has all of your Zone 5 solutions, and basically that's where we are in Zone 5, including answers for questions you might never even have considered. For instance, what about a gravel garden? That's right, planting a low-maintenance, drought-tolerant garden right into the gravel. My friend Roy Diblick from Northwind Perennial Farm is the guy behind this, and the story on how to do it is in Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. I've talked a lot about tomatoes this summer. We got a bumper crop out back of the radio station here. They are just all starting to turn red. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine has a story on the top 10 tomato problems and how to overcome them. And then there's my column on the inside back page. If you don't get there, it's because there's just too darn much information in the rest of the publication. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is on newsstands all over the area, but why not subscribe and have it delivered to your home? Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We are on the line with Maurice Ogutu, PhD, extension educator. He is the fruits and vegetables expert from the University of Illinois Extension. And Maurice, I want to go to a call, a caller on line one, and that would be Tom. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing today?
Good. What's your question?
I have a question. I work at a therapy. I'm a therapist at a therapeutic day school in Arlington Heights.
Mm-hmm.
And next year, we're going to start a vegetable garden. We have a plot of land we can work with at this school. Also, I know this is too ambitious to start a butterfly garden as well. But my question for you is this. What should the process be in terms of getting things started? Because I want to get the kids involved in terms of planting the seeds, seeing the growth, I mean, seeing the whole development from start to finish. So what should be the first thing I should be doing in terms of getting this process started?
Maurice, he wants to get a school garden started. Leah tells me you also want the best plants that won't cost an arm and a leg as well.
Correct. That as well as something that's going to grow, it's going to take well. And then because we also have summer school, so the kids can see some of that development during the course of summer school, which goes about the first week of July or so, give or take.
Right. Maurice, he's got a garden that he wants to start. I'm going to tell Tom the first thing you do is you tend to the soil. You make sure your soil is good, right?
Yes.
By adding compost to the soil if you haven't done that already.
Okay, I don't think so. No.
Okay, well, Maurice, where do you like to get your compost?
I think there are some composting facilities within Chicago area where you can buy compost. There are many, but I think university does not allow us to recommend one, but there are so many. If you
that's
go to
true.
The
sorry about that. That's right. I understand. You got university rules, and you can't really, there's. But he's right, Tom. There's a number of great places where you can get compost. Where are you located?
Yeah, our school is Timber Ridge School in Arlington Heights. We're probably close to Pesci's.
Yeah, and you could go up there, and what I would do is, and I tell people to do this all the time, go to a good independent garden center, ask them where they like to get their compost.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's in the neighborhood, that makes sense for you. Now, Maurice, what kind of plants are going to be good for him to start? Now, he says the school lets out in July, so that sounds like you probably don't want to plant tomatoes because you're not going to see them ripen, or at least the kids aren't. What kind of vegetables would you start with, Maurice?
So I think something like pumpkin will be good because if you plant pumpkins, then the pumpkin fruits will be ready by harvesting in September when the kids are back to school for the Halloween.
But don't they have to be tended over the summer?
Yes, but it's very minimal. I think if it is a site where the soil has good moisture holding capacity, and they'll be attended a little bit less. Now, they'll need less attention compared to tomatoes and other vegetables.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed about gourds and that sort of thing, once they take off, they sort of
They got a life of their own.
They got a life of their own. Yeah, I've got a gourd plant that's rapidly taking over my backyard right now. In fact, it invaded my garage. The vine just went in through the window into the garage. Anything else you can think of, Maurice, that he should get started with?
No, the other thing you may need to consider is to grow some cool season crops, like for the fall garden,
mm-hmm.
like peas, and he can plant peas or some beets, and these are the ones that he can plant maybe in mid-August or late July, then they will grow until fall, so when the kids are in school.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Cool season crops, Tom, actually you can grow them in the fall, you can grow them in the spring. And they mature quickly. They like the cool weather. So you've got lettuces and spinach, and those kinds of things. Swiss chard too, right, Maurice?
Yes.
Swiss chard is nice because it's colorful. There's what I would do, Tom, next is go to Illinois Extension. I've got a link on my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show, and I've got two websites that are great. It's one is UrbanXt. It says Illinois Extension websites. Click on that link. And the other is something that Maurice contributes to, which is the Illinois Fruit and Vegetable News, which you can subscribe to. That's what I would advise you. And if you got any more questions, write me, Tom, Mike@MikeNovak.net.
One quick question. You think it's too ambitious? A butterfly garden and at the same time?
That's a good question. Maurice, he wants to have a butterfly garden and a vegetable garden. Is that too ambitious?
It's not very ambitious. I think if you have time to spend on taking care of the gardens, then it's not a problem.
Yeah, you have to get the plants established, obviously.
Right.
And once they are, butterfly attracting plants are... once you get them established, they take care of themselves, too.
Right.
All right. Well, Tom, like I said, if you got any other questions, give me a holler, all right?
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. You can grab those other calls. We got one coming in on line 3. Rick will call Rick. He waits for us to call him. We have just a couple of minutes here, Maurice. I wanted to ask you a question. I had a personal question about growing in earth boxes, and I assume that you've used earth boxes before.
Yes, I have some idea about how you grow stuff in earth boxes.
I had a couple of earth boxes, one here at the radio station. A couple here at the radio station. I put in a zucchini that got powdery mildew pretty early on. We got started late in planting around, it was in June. And it got powdery mildew, and even though I tried to treat it and trim the leaves, it just seemed to suck the life out of the plant, and the vine turned to mush, and finally this week we had to just yank it out. Is this something common?
Powdery mildew is very, very common this year. In fact, I've noticed it in some of the even commercial vegetable fields around. And this year, I think it came a little bit early. It usually comes around late August, early September, but this year it came a little bit early. And it's not only common on plants that are grown on earth boxes, but even on field-grown plants.
The other thing we had a problem with was blossom end rot in the earth boxes, and it seemed to affect certain varieties of tomatoes, like plum tomatoes. And a friend of mine who is in the business, I thought explained it pretty well, and maybe you can tell me if she's right. She said one of the things, you know, because blossom end rot is caused by lack of calcium, the water uptake is not consistent. And her contention was earlier in, well, and maybe even this week that we're going to have the same conditions, but earlier we had so much heat and humidity. And these earth boxes I had were on asphalt next to a brick wall. It was very hot. And she said she thought the plants might be transpiring faster than they could soak up water from the roots. So that led to stress and the blossom end rot. Do you agree with that?
The blossom end rot occurs due to lack of calcium in the fruit. And also, if there is fluctuating soil moisture, that one also predisposes the plant to blossom end rot.
Yes, but the point is I had them in earth boxes, and the soil moisture is supposed to be consistent in an earth box, and we watered them every day.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, but I think it may be a possibility that maybe the plants were transpiring more during a hot, humid day. But I'm not 100% sure about that.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to ask you one more question because I had somebody tweet that to me. And the question was, if you had a compost pile that was flooded, is that in danger of being infected with pathogens as well? And how do you address the using compost that might have been underwater?
Yes. So the first thing is, as I talked, is the source of the flood water. Because if the flood water, the water is contaminated, then it will affect the compost. Then also the stage at which the compost is. Because, you know, if it is a compost that is now starting to mature, is still being turned, it has not reached the peak temperature where the pathogens are killed, then I think if there are some pathogens, then when the compost gets hot, then it will kill those pathogens. But if it is a mature compost that is ready to be used in the garden, then I'm saying you need to be very cautious because when you apply it in the garden, then you may be trying to put some of the pathogens in the garden.
Yeah, so if it's already mature, maybe the best idea is to shovel it to a new location to air it out and then leave it over the winter and apply it in the spring. Do you think that would be a good idea?
Yes, and if possible, if you have another compost pile, then you need to add it to that pile, then recompost it. Then
good point. Add it to the fresh compost pile, but don't if your compost pile was underwater too, you probably don't want to put that in your garden. Maurice Ogutu, PhD extension educator from Countryside, I really appreciate you being here and answering these questions because a number of people called and wrote to me, and they wanted to know what to do about this. And I think the bottom line here is that you need to be safe. If you're not sure, don't eat those vegetables. Don't plant in that area. If you do want to plant, add fresh compost, not compost that might have been contaminated in your yard. One friend of mine said gypsum is a good idea. Do you think so?
No, but addition of gypsum depends on the soil test. The gypsum depends on the soil test. If the soil test shows that there's lack of magnesium, then you can add gypsum. But if the soil test shows that you have adequate magnesium and calcium, then you don't have to add gypsum.
Yes. Okay. Maurice, thank you so much. I hope we speak again, and I appreciate your time on a Sunday morning.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Take care now.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And again, the links are on my site. And what I'm going to do, go to MikeNovak.net, MikeNovak.net/thisweek. There are links to the extension sites there, but I didn't, because I hadn't talked to Maurice before the show. I wasn't sure what he was going to say, so I didn't have the answers up there. So I'm going to listen to this conversation and transcribe some of it and put it up there. But I think we have the right idea, which is if your yard was flooded and you don't know where the water came from, you really can't be sure it didn't have pathogens in it. You got to be careful. It might not be good enough just to wash the vegetables. You probably just got to get rid of them, you know, throw them in the compost pile. And be careful even of your compost. I should mention also that I have a brand new blog. I'll get into that later. The Go Green or Go Home blog. And that's, of course, Heather's little slogan, go green or go home. All right, let us, you know what, I'm not even going to take a break because I know he's been holding a while. He's my favorite meteorologist. I watched him last night on Channel 2, and he's Rick DeMaio. How you doing, Rick?
Good morning, Mike. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm good. Good. How about you?
Good. I haven't had my morning cup of joe, but it's waiting for me. Don't worry about it. I'll get to it soon.
Well, you know, the morning cup of joe, you don't want it too hot because it's already going to get hot, right? From what I saw saying last night, the next 4 days could be a little sticky.
You know what? Very sticky. And I think, if anything, Mike, it's going to be more so humidity rather than heat that's going to be a factor. I'm not really too sold into the fact that this is going to be a heat wave. I just think we're looking at maybe 4 days of very warm temperatures, a lot of humidity, but that's pretty much been the pattern this whole summer. And, you know, someone came up to me the other day and said, boy, it's been so hot. And I said, when was the last time we were above 90? They go, oh, just the other day, right? And not really. The last time we were above 90 was actually July the 23rd. It was that Friday that you were out by the Rock River that we had all those severe thunderstorms.
Right.
On that Friday afternoon to that Saturday. So we've gone basically, you know, 2+ weeks without hitting 90 degrees, although it's still quite a bit warmer during that period of time, right?
And that is confusing people. It's fooling them. You know, we've actually been spared the nastiest of this heat. I look at those warnings in the south and the east, and it seems to be everywhere except us.
Right. Yeah, northern Illinois, parts of southern Wisconsin, have really been spared the extreme heat. In fact, last week I did a little bit of a climate study, and basically through June and July, we've had 14 days above 90 at Midway, 13 at O'Hare. But down in Kankakee, they've reached 90 degrees 27 times already. And in parts of central Illinois, just last week, they had heat index values close to 110 and 115 for nearly 2 or 3 days straight. And that was pretty much from about the Quad Cities over to Peoria, Bloomington, down to about Champaign, St. Louis, obviously, up to about, I think it was 102 they hit one day with the peak heat index of about 118 and 120. It's amazing. You go to these urban areas. One thing I teach students is what's called the urban heat island effect. And you look at places like St. Louis and Memphis, and they'll get up to 103, 104, and some of the surrounding communities are probably maybe 99, 98, maybe 100. So those urban heat islands definitely had not only heat, but obviously trapped the humidity as well. And like you said, we've been spared the worst of it. And I do think this next round of heat will probably be, you know, a little bit warmer than the last two or three. But I'm still thinking it's going to be what we call a dirty heat wave, a lot of cloud cover, a lot of humidity, a couple of showers and thunderstorms off and on. Even this morning, there's a couple of running across the state line near Wisconsin. And I think that's going to kind of keep the heat down a little bit just today as well.
And unfortunately, Tuesday, where, mm-hmm. and I do believe I saw something that you said last night, you thought the heat index might be approaching 102 on Tuesday. Is that still holding?
Yeah, I think so. I think Monday and Tuesday, we probably have, if we clear out, most likely with the dew point temperatures getting up into the mid-70s, all you need is a temperature of about 93 or 94 with the dew point of about 75, and you can easily eclipse 100 degrees. But I do think it's going to probably cool down a little bit with some rain on Wednesday.
Yeah, but that doesn't do me any good because Tuesday is the day
you're building a log cabin in your backyard, right?
I'm going to Bolingbrook to slam in plants for the, remember our big contest, the ultimate backyard makeover?
Uh-huh.
Well, Ron Cowgill from Mighty House has been working his butt off to get that together. They tore down the big deck. And they did it last week, and there are pictures of it. You can see it on my website on the homepage. It's a report from Backyard Makeover, and we've got a little slideshow. In fact, you can see after the deck got torn down and all this rain came, there's a big old mud hole there.
That's in Bolingbrook?
Yeah, this is in Bolingbrook. And, but we, are moving ahead. Ron has been working. I can't tell you how hard the guy's been working on this project. This is a contest. I thought that the powers that be do all the work, but you know who the powers that be are? Ron Cowgill with DNR Services. He's the guy that's been doing this, and I'll tell you, he's got a whip, and he's been whipping everybody into shape with this.
Wow.
He's so organized. Now, Tuesday, I'm supposed to go and help put in the plants. And it's going to be 100, and we're probably going to be there all day. And
yeah, you're going to sweat a lot.
I'm going to be a dead man by the end of the day, basically. And I can't believe I'm doing that, too. But
Well, but you volunteered your service. Isn't that going to be a good one? You always have to remember, I remember, and I think you could probably do the same as, you remember those, they used to call them the Nesty Iced Tea Plunge, where they would show somebody working in the backyard, and all of a sudden they'd have a glass of iced tea, and they'd just fall right back into a pool, and they'd be holding on to the glass of iced tea. And I remember as kids growing up, we had a small pool in our backyard, and we used to always try to, you know, imitate the stuff you'd see on TV. And you know, here it is, we're falling back into the pool, holding on to a glass of a beverage, and obviously the smarter ones in the family did it with water, but my brother Robert decided to do it actually with a glass of grape juice. So lo and behold, the pool took on a faint tint of purple after that. it wasn't very bright. So maybe when you're done at the end of the day, you can find a local pool and when no one's watching, just do a little bit of a Nesty iced tea plunge. How about that?
I'm going to need one. I know I'm going to need one after Tuesday. So
and a bar of soap, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm going to bring my Old Spice with me. Apply liberally.
Now we're really talking late 70s TV commercials, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
How about Irish Spring, Old Spice, and a glass of Nesty iced tea, right?
Well, except we use Irish Spring to deter deer. There are a lot of people who swear by it. Did you know that?
What was that again?
Irish Spring... Uh-huh. Is a deer deterrent.
Really?
Yeah, well, that's, you read about it online and you've heard people use anecdotally. I'll tell you what, if anybody out there in the listening audience has ever used Irish Spring to keep deer away from their garden, give us a call. 773, right. Leah wants to hear the story. 773-838-9278. And you read about it, and I always think of it as soap on a rope. You know, that's your cure for deer is soap on a rope. And
it's also a cure for getting rid of friends.
It might be. It might be. So we're looking at muggy, hot, not necessarily brutally hot, but pretty darn hot. And then it breaks, you say, about Wednesday?
I think it breaks late Wednesday night and into Thursday. But in the short term, we're watching this really, you know, solid line of rain. Extending all the way from parts of Dubuque, Iowa, across Madison, Janesville, right into the Milwaukee area. And it looks like the bulk of it is moving generally from the west to the east. And I do think if you're heading up to maybe parts of northern sections of McHenry and Lake County, you'll probably run into maybe about an hour or two of some light rain showers. And it looks like once that rain ends, then at that point we're just looking at a lot of cloud cover. So a couple of sprinkles late this afternoon, clouds, and then it looks like temperatures slowly getting up into the low 90s today.
Yeah, I was when I got up, I looked at the radar quickly, and I saw this huge blob north of here, but you don't think most of that's going to make it to Chicago?
I think most of it will probably weaken before it gets here. This is what I was talking about last night on the air. I thought that definitely there was going to be a lot of activity that's going to make it close to us, but I do think the bulk of this is probably going to stay just to the north of us, and the farther south you are, the better you are. But I think it's going to hold down the temperatures primarily across the northern suburbs. But generally to the south of us, we'll probably still make it up into the low to mid-90s. And then it's going to be one of these things where it's just a matter of how close some of the outflow or some of the what we call convective debris, that's the leftover cloud cover, from some of these thunderstorms beginning to work their way south to north, or I should say from north to south.
I'll tell you, Rick,
that's going to be with us basically all week.
I'm looking at the radar right now, and you know I'm not a meteorologist, but that looks like it's got a bullseye. Chicago's got a bullseye on it right now. But you're thinking most of it won't get here?
Well, I think the northern part across northern Lake and McHenry County probably will. But there's a little bit of the stuff across part of just to the north and east of Dubuque, Iowa, that probably will get in here probably sometime between about maybe 10 or 10:30. So if you draw a line from, say, I-90, that's the Northwest Tollway, north and eastward, we're definitely looking at about an hour or two of rain. And then you go from about I-88 southward, maybe about an hour of rain. And from about I-80 southward, maybe about a half hour rain. So again, it all depends on exactly where you are.
Mm-hmm.
I would definitely see, you know, at least the northern suburbs getting into definitely some rain this morning.
All right, and give me your prognosis for the end of the week. Does it cools off a little bit?
It cools off most likely by Wednesday night and into Thursday. So I think probably low to mid 90s late this afternoon. I emphasize late. And then probably low 90s for Monday, low 90s for Tuesday. And it looks like a fairly wet day on Wednesday and definitely cools off during the day on Thursday. But I don't think the real cool weather is going to get here for a couple of weeks. So when I say cool off, I just mean anything from the low 90s probably into the mid to upper 80s.
Yeah. Well, it's still summer. It's still August.
Definitely is. Yeah.
All right. Rick DeMaio Weather. I'm looking at the radar on DeMaioWeather.com. You can click on that for all kinds of great information, and you can find it on my website or just go straight to DeMaioWeather.com. Great talking to you, and we'll do it again next week.
Okay. Sure do. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. If you're working on improving your garden soil, here's something you need to try. Back to Nature Cotton Burr Compost. Cotton Burr Compost is a great food source for beneficial soil organisms. It's those organisms that are making your plants healthy. And Cotton Burr Compost feeds the organisms that feed your plants. Put a thin layer of Cotton Burr Compost around your trees and shrubs. Roses in particular seem to thrive on it. However, any tree or shrub in distress is likely to respond to an application. Here's another thing you're going to like. It's a clay buster. Cotton Burr Compost is prized for its ability to break up tight clay soils. It's got those cotton burrs in it, you know, and they go in and they do the job. It improves moisture retention and fertility in sandy soils. And unlike wood and wood-based compost, it will not tie up nutrients in the soil. Pick up a bag of Back to Nature Cotton Burr Compost at your local independent lawn and garden dealer. You can find Back to Nature products at The Barn in Cary, Gethsemane Garden Center in Chicago, and Pesci's, of course, in Des Plaines and Lake Geneva. Now, here's a tip from the care of trees. We've had more than one summer storm this year, and if your tree lost some limbs, you might need some help from the care of trees. When trees are damaged, they grow protective cells around the wounded area, much like your blood forms a scab. This happens at the branch collar, a swollen area where the branch grows from the trunk. But if the wound is jagged, the healing can't happen and the tree is vulnerable to insects and diseases. That's why you need a certified arborist to properly prune your tree. With 9 locations, the Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220, 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees. And you should know, speaking of trees, after 9 o'clock, we are having a reunion right here in the studio. The big Tour de Trees, 2010 Steel Tour de Trees reunion. We miss each other 3 weeks down the road so much that we just had to get all back in the studio and talk about what a great time we had. Well, actually, I don't know. Well, we just wanted to do it. Talk about the experiences of the people on the Tour de Trees, which means we're going to have arborists in studio and on the show, which means after 9 o'clock, if you have tree questions, that's a good time to call. So, get on board, give Leah a holler, 773-838-9278. If you got a tree question, I mean, we've done the vegetable question. We got a couple of others. Jerry's on the line. I will get to her in a second. And it's all on the Mike Novak Show.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Are you a savvy gardener? If you are, you know that late summer is the time to get the greatest bargains for your yard. And this is Savvy Gardener time at Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center in Palos Hills and Bolingbrook. That's because their annual sidewalk clearance sale is this Friday and Saturday, August 13th and 14th, starting at 8 a.m. each day. It doesn't cost anything to get in, and you'll save up to 70% and more on discounted, overstocked, and end-of-season items. Quantities are limited while supplies last. No pre-sales, no sales to... I like this part. They say no sales to dealers. And I say just good, hard-working gardeners. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on April Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. For hours and directions, visit SIDSonline.com. And remember, when you're done planting, bring your cell packs, grower pots, and other plastic containers to SIDS for recycling, or pick up donated pots for use in your home garden. Now, a lot of gardeners like using liquid fertilizers for their gardens and containers. You need to try Liquid Solution from Dr. Earth. It's an all-purpose organic fertilizer with chelated multi-minerals and growth enhancers for use on all plants. And we mean all plants, including fruits and vegetables, trees, shrubs, container plants, and even, yes, lawn. Liquid Solution is designed to enhance plant growth and correct micronutrient deficiencies. 35 million satisfied customers, can't be wrong. Dr. Earth is available only at your local independent garden center. Go to drearth.com to find a dealer near you.
Express yourself. Express yourself.
Welcome to the Mike Novak Show on Sunday. You know, I got a question for those listening. How would you feel if the show didn't start at 8, but actually started at 9? I know some of my guests would be happier. Like, why don't you pull this microphone over? Because in studio we have Mary DiCarlo from the Tree Fund. How are you, Mary?
I'm doing well, Mike. I've been living for that for the last 3 weeks.
Because I'm the only person who does that.
You are the only person who does that. I have a whole new appreciation for my name after listening to you do that.
Mary DiCarlo! Well, listen, hang on. She's got with the crew, the tree crew, and they're all going to be here. We got some more folks, some coming to the studio.
Well, we had some folks that said they were going to show up at the studio.
Yeah,
maybe,
right.
Maybe they were hoping you were going to move your show to 9.
Well, that's it. You know, and I'd be interested what my listeners think if the show started at 9 instead of 8. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. So tweet me about that, or write Mike at MikeNovak.net, or even call. Let me know what you think. Let's go to line 3 and bring in Jerry. How you doing, Jerry?
I am fine. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
I have a question for you. I have a terrible infestation of milkweed beetles. My fault, because when I first saw the beetles, I didn't chase them away or get rid of them. And now they're really eating my milkweed plants. I raise butterflies, and I'm having a bit of difficulty. How would you get rid of that? I've been squirting them, but then I'm afraid I'll lose the eggs or the caterpillars that are on there.
Yeah.
Just squirting them with a stream of water, and I don't know how to get rid of them. I thought maybe you could help me.
Well, you know what? I've not encountered that because I've never grown milkweed. You know what I'm going to do for you is do a quick search here and see what I can do to help you resolve this problem. Just give me a few minutes, and you have my email address too.
Yes,
which
I
is
do.
mike@mikenovak.net.
Mm-hmm.
And I will I'm looking online here for milkweed bug, and is it the orange, and
it's the orange and black.
Yeah.
And it just leaves thousands of eggs and larvae all over the place.
They have few predators, it says here, because they taste bad due to the compounds found in milkweed plants. Well, you know, which is why the monarchs do so well there, too.
Right.
All you guys just come in the studio. We got all the tree guys are coming in now. It's a, you know, it oil sprays. It seems to be the best solution for that. Have you ever used an oil spray or a neem product?
No, I have not.
Well, that seems to be the best way to do it. Now, how much milkweed do you have?
Well, I have a pretty good crop. I have about maybe 8 plants in different areas, and then they reseed themselves. But it's only on one particular patch of milkweed right now.
Well, it sounds like you might be able to do some control. The reason I ask is that using oil products and heat is can be a problem because it can smother your plants because it not only covers the insects, but it covers the stomata on the plant leaves.
And, all right.
Mm-hmm. So what I would do is check with your local garden center. Where do you like to go?
Pesci's.
All right. Oh, talk to Wally. Go up to Wally, just ask him, tell him this, and he will tell you when you can apply it and when you can't. But it sounds like an oil neem product is going to be the best bet, but he'll let you know when it's safe to use. And tell him I sent you and make sure you get good service from him, okay?
Okay. Now, I tell you one thing very quickly. I know
you got like 10 seconds.
The guy from Arlington Heights, if he wants to start a butterfly garden, perennials, butterfly bush, butterfly weed, or Joe Pye weed, plant them, don't have to worry, you'll have tons of butterflies.
There you go. That's you know, if it has a word butterfly in it, use it.
Right.
All right. Thanks,
thank
Jerry.
Thanks.
Write me and but go talk to Wally.
Okay, will do. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, we're coming up on CNN News at the top of the hour, and then afterwards, the big 2010 Steel Tour to Trees reunion. There's 400 people right here in the studio, and we will be talking trees. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by Espoma, the leader in natural gardening solutions since 1929, and by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is, Mike Novak.
And lives up the block, back in school, she could turn all the boys' heads. Sometimes on a...
Yeah, glory days, a tour to tree. Oh my goodness, it goes back and goes by so fast, and here we are 3 weeks later, and we still can't live without each other. This is the Mike Novak Show, and I have got a ton of people in the studio. Now, you're going to have to pull the mics a little bit closer than that. I did mention that Mary DiCarlo was here from the Tree Fund. Mary, a pleasure, as always. Wait. Mary DiCarlo is in the studio. And Mark Younger is here, and Greg Kedju. Kedju. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Kedju.
Kedju. Oh. But it's French. It must be Kedju. Kedju. And John Kirchner is here as well. And now, I know that John's a senior forester with the Chicago Bureau of Forestry, right?
That's John? Right.
Are the other two, are you arborists as well?
Mark Younger, I'm the city arborist for Evanston.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
President-elect for the Illinois Arborist Association.
Ooh, wow.
A celebrity.
Yeah. And Greg?
I'm a longtime friend of Mark Younger's. I did nothing more than ride in the tour.
Nothing more.
Nothing more than raise at least $3,500 and get on a... You know, one of the things that I noticed when I met up with you guys in Kewaunee was how flimsy those bicycles looked. I mean, they're you know, the skinny wheels. I've got that little the thing that's got that I ride in the city that's got slightly thicker tires, a little more like a hybrid. I don't even think they make hybrids anymore. I don't know if they call them nowadays. But, you know, it's tougher. It can handle a few bumps. But it seems like you guys hit a bump out there, and you're just going to go flying off into the weeds.
Greg might be able to talk about that.
All right, Greg, tell us something. Lean into that mic a little bit.
We had a little mishap on the second day of the tour where Pam Pinkley and I kind of bumped into each other and about 18 miles an hour and went off. But we did survive.
Wait a second. And that's my cue to bring in the late, great Pam Pinkley. How you doing, Pam?
Hello. Hello, Mike. I'm doing great.
You sure you're okay?
I'm mending. Yes.
Are you the one who needed stitches?
No, actually.
Oh, you're not the one who needed stitches.
She's the other one.
Oh, my goodness. How many mishaps did you have along the way?
No, I'm the one that needed x-rays.
Oh, okay. You needed x-rays, and they... you know the old joke, they x-rayed your head and found nothing, right? Wait, I don't have a rim shot, I just go with my bell. By the way, well, since we're bringing everybody in, let's get to Jim Skira. Is that how you pronounce that? Jim?
That's right.
All right. And
how you doing, Mike?
He's the executive, speaking of fancy guys in the room, executive director of the International Society of Arboriculture. And, well, you know, all we need now is a real tree in the studio, and we would be fine. We'd have it all. It's great to have all of you here. Now, let's, you know, Mary, I could explain what the Tour de Trees is, but you might as well do it, because Mary is a person I worked with behind the scenes for months leading up to the broadcast on July 18th. And I know that you are responsible for pulling together a lot of different elements for this. Tell me about the 2010 Steel Tour de Trees and why you're doing it and what was involved in bringing it together.
Well, the 2010 Steel Tour de Trees was actually the 19th tour that we've run. This has been going on for years and years, much longer than I've been involved with the Tree Fund. The Tour de Trees is the signature fundraising event for the Tree Fund, and it's really the primary fundraiser for tree research in the United States, North America, and the world. The 2010 tour was absolutely the biggest thing we've ever done. We have totally raised the bar for this event. I'm very afraid for the future.
Well, you don't have to deal with me anymore, so that's a good thing.
Well, I was thinking of hiring you as a contractor.
Oh, and to do what?
To yell my name the next place we go.
that's what we call egomaniacal, actually, but you need it sometimes because you're working behind the scenes and pulling cyclists and entertainers. You had to help put up the big benefit the night before the launch.
Yeah, it was a huge
with
event.
Chuck Lavelle. And by the way, is Chuck Lavelle the nicest, most gracious man you've ever met? He was just fabulous, not only the night before at the benefit, but and for those of you listening who don't know who Chuck Lavelle is, you've been on the moon for the last 30 years or so. He's the keyboardist for the Rolling Stones. If you've ever heard the song Jessica by the Allman Brothers, that's Chuck Lavelle. He's worked with the fabulous Thunderbirds and on Clapton. He's
Sea
on
level.
Sea Level. If you heard the Clapton Unplugged album or seen the DVD, that's Chuck Lavelle. So he, you know, I don't know what to expect from the guy, and he comes out on the morning of the big launch from Millennium Park, and he's sitting there at the keyboard and just wailing away, having a good time. I mean, Heather was in heaven. She took this video and she posted it on Facebook of Lavelle, who kept winking at her, and I'm thinking, don't encourage the woman, okay? Don't do that. But Heather has a way of getting guys to wink at her. I don't know what that's all about. But he was fabulous, and just having him on to do the send-off was so cool. And that was the second time he's been involved?
Yes, he played for us in Central Park last year when we launched from New York City. And, yeah, he is the keyboardist for the Rolling Stones, and that's probably the thing that we use to really attach the star power to him. But he's also an avid environmentalist.
Oh, yeah.
He's one of the most visible environmentalists in the country right now. He
goes and one of the best. All over the I mean, he's tree farmer.
He's a tree farmer. He's a beautiful
world class tree farmer. He's won the Georgia Tree Farmer of the Year award a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And he started an environmental website, the Mother Nature News
Network,
yeah. rather Mother Nature Network, and see, that's why you're here. You just correct me. See, you memorize all this stuff.
I'm a natural born editor.
Yeah,
you're in trouble.
I'm just operating off of
what's written
of the cheat sheet here. That's me. All right. Well, since we're all assembled here, I think we have to start. And Jim, I hope you'll forgive me because we'll get to you. And I'm actually going to ask some serious tree questions along the way. Because I, you know, probably a little bit about emerald ash borer and, thousand canker, disease, which is, why are you frowning?
No, someone else in our office takes care of those things. Oh. But I know I do know about them.
See, I knew there was going to be one troublemaker in the group, and that's Kirchner.
You were counting on one?
You know, it's funny. I was looking up your name yesterday on Google, John. Do you know what's out there?
Uh-oh.
No, actually, I Googled in John's name because I wanted to make sure I had your title correct. And about the sixth... entry down, or sixth link down on Google, on the first page, was our conversation on WGN from 2002.
Cool.
I couldn't believe it was still up there. It's like, are you kidding me? That's the thing about the internet. These things never disappear. They're just up there forever and ever. All right. So that being said, I want to start with the Tree Amigos. Okay, and the story of the Tree Amigos. Now, who wants to start that? Maybe Pam, we should start with you because I guess it sort of revolves around you. Everything revolves around you, right, Pam?
Oh my! I guess yes. The Tree Amigos. The story behind that, real kind of quick story about that, is the last time, previous to our writing experience. With the tour, we had reunited last October after a 25-year absentee friendship that originated back in high school. And I think the last time I had seen the two boys there, Mark and Greg, was at my wedding back in 1985. So when Facebook came along and we reunited, we figured out we had some common interests in cycling, and I had some environmental interests, and Mark, being the arborist, brought us into the idea of joining up with the tour and raising funds for it and putting our legs in motion.
You know, it tells me something that after your wedding, you didn't want to see these guys for 25 years. So what did they do at the wedding? That's what I want to know, you know?
Oh, they completely made fools of themselves on the stage where the band was supposed to be playing. They took over and decided to do their own little thing.
Is that true? See, I was just making that up, but apparently they did. Do either of you want to respond? Any rebuttal there from Greg or Mark?
I thought it was a rousing version of New York, New York with the high kicks and everything, but she never returned our calls after that.
And then 25 years later comes Facebook. She says, you know what? Enough time has passed. I forgive them. And what made you want to do a 500-mile bicycle ride and raise all this money with these two guys?
Well, they are a fun group of boys, to hang out with and very motivating. So I figured they'd protect me too. So, It was one of those things where I could do what I had envisioned doing. I really wanted to get back into cycling, and I'd do it for a good cause and with two fun people. So, you know, it all kind of just fell in place, and, of course, our families all thought we were nuts. Yeah, that was...
Well, unfortunately, they attacked you on the road. At least Greg did.
That's a good way to put it, you know. We go with that.
And where did this spill happen?
It happened on our second day. We were traveling from Zion to our destination was supposed to be Rockford, and we were about 30 miles into the ride. I think we were, it was all kind of a blur. I think we were on Grass Lake Road, if I'm not mistaken. And I was riding with three Canadians, and Greg was...
Oh, well, see, there's your answer right there.
And then Greg was up ahead. He usually leaves me in his dust, and we were trying to overtake him. And in the process of passing, I have to admit, could have been partly my fault. I did get a little close on the passing, and we locked handlebars and took a dive. So it wasn't fun.
I imagine not. And how long did it take you out of commission? You probably had to hop on the van, and I know that there was a van that would... For no, no van. John's going, no. John, what do you... Tell me.
I met up with Pam after they had had their little... And Greg left their little crash, and of course Greg was needed to get on going, and I stuck with Pam, and the van came along and says, Pam, come on, let's go. You really shouldn't be riding. You had this bump. You need to get out of here. She says, no, I'm not getting in there. She just refused to get in.
Really?
There.
Well, she's so tough.
Yeah,
Stubborn. Okay.
I heard that.
I know. His mic's on. I can shut it off if you want. I have that power here. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, and we have the Tour de Trees people in here, riders and arborists, except for Mary DiCarlo, who organized the thing, and that's why she organized it, so she wouldn't have to ride, so she could be in the van. And
wait a minute.
She was on the road.
Did you get on a cycle for a little bit?
I did. I did not log 500 miles, but I did log 85.
Okay, that's. I'll tell you what, I need to take a short break, but that's something I want to address. And by the way, Leah, I noticed Snarky Vegan on Twitter says that Mr. Brown Thumb has a post on about milkweed beetles.
Yes,
so if you could find the Mr. Brown Thumb's post, I don't know whether it's... you've got the article there. Yeah, we'll track that down and see if I came even close to giving the right advice. We'll take a short break. And when we come back, I want to talk about what it's like to have to cycle 500 miles. The day I saw you in Kewaunee, it was hot. It was one of those hot, muggy days. And a lot of folks were just dragging. Because it was like third day. No, it was Thursday.
It was Thursday.
So you'd been going since Sunday. And everybody talked to you said, we're going into the wind and it's uphill.
Plus, they just had this huge breakfast in Geneseo, so they were all loaded down with scrambled eggs and sausage and God knows what. It was not necessarily the best breakfast for the heat.
It wasn't a breakfast of champions?
Well, they made it to Kewaunee, I would say.
Yeah, they did.
A lot.
They did. All right, so we'll be back with all of them, and that includes, and I need my cheat sheet because so many people here, Mary DiCarlo, Mark Younger, Greg Cadu, John Kirchner, Pam Pinkley, and Jim Skira. And we'll continue that in a second. A lot of gardeners might not be able to tell you the names of specific soil products, but even new gardeners quickly learn the name of one exceptional product, Holytone from Espoma. Holytone is the original acid-loving plant food. In the Chicago area, our soils are basically alkaline, sometimes way too alkaline, which prevents some nutrients from being taken up by acid-loving plants like rhododendrons, hollies, and blueberries. I often tell people if you want to grow blueberries, the easiest way to do that is move to Michigan. But you could also use Holytone. Holytone's blend of natural organics provides a safe, long-lasting feeding. And now Holytone contains biotone beneficial microbes for even better growth and color. All natural Holytone is low in salts, so it won't burn plant roots and it won't leach out of the soil with the next rain. One application of Holytone lasts for months and even improves your soil. For more than 50 years, this is what the experts in Chicago have been telling you to use for your acid-loving plants. For more information about Holytone and other Espoma products, call 888-ESPOMA-1 or visit espoma.com. E-S-P-O-M-A. The leader in natural gardening solutions since 1929.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Urban Wildlife has a new place to call home with the opening of the Nature Boardwalk at Lincoln Park. The 14-acre habitat at the zoo's South Pond is designed to be a slice of prairie in the big city. Though popular for its paddle boat rides, the man-made South Pond had become stagnant and virtually devoid of wildlife. I don't know if how many of you had ever been down there, but it wasn't pretty for a while. That's changed. Naturalized slopes and a new island welcome the waterfowl and other aquatic wildlife. Prairie plants and more than 100 new trees also help revive the native ecosystem. Enjoy a walking trail around the pond and keep an eye out for black-crowned night herons, yellow-bellied sapsuckers, painted turtles, and more. Also watch for interactive displays with special zoo programs interpreting the new habitat. WRD Environmental was part of the South Pond rehabilitation team. That doesn't surprise me one darn bit. Creating sustainable landscapes since 1997, WRD is a recognized leader in creating eco-friendly settings that bring people and nature together. For sustainable landscape solutions, choose WRD Environmental. And you can find them, oddly enough, at WRDEnvironmental.com.
Well, I was working on my farm about 1982, pulling up some corn and a little carrot, too. We do love flying aeroplanes about 100 feet high. Dropped a bunch of bales or something and some hit me in the eye. So I cut a bale open and man was I surprised. A bunch of large size baggies and big white rocks inside. So I took a little sample to my crazy brother Joe. He sniffed it up and kicked his heels and said, Horton, that's some blow. Bales of cocaine falling from the flying plane. I don't know who done dropped them, but I think I'm just the same. Bales of cocaine falling like a pouring rain. My life's changed completely by the flying plane.
Now, this has nothing to do with the tour to trees, but
you better believe it.
I just
my career is plummeting here, Mike.
All those wonderful sponsors, you know, like Steel, of course, and Bartlett, and the ones who sponsored the radio show.
That would be Davey.
Right, Davey, the tree expert company, and the care of trees. They're never going to speak to me again if they listen to the podcast of this show. And you can find the podcast, complete with bales of cocaine dropping from the sky, at MikeNovak.net, and look for the podcast. I got to tell you, a friend of mine, a buddy of mine, just put a bunch of CDs together for me. And some of the greatest music. He's also a horticulturist. Actually, designer. Do you know Dan Perciarello? Ring a bell with anybody? Okay. He helped work on the lily pool, Caldwell Lily Pool restoration in Lincoln Park. And just gave me a bunch of great songs. So I'm going to blame Dan. This is all Dan's work.
Yeah. Well,
we have the
send
the,
an email to my boss.
Hey, you knew the job was dangerous when you took it. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM. And see, that's progressive, right? I don't know.
That was very progressive.
Yeah. It might be very progressive. Way too progressive for my audience. And I've got the Tour de Trees people in here. All right. Including on the line, Jim Skira and Pam Pinkley, and here in the studio. I have to use my cheat sheet. Mark Younger, Greg Cadieux, John Kirchner, and Mary DiCarlo. And how does one make the decision to get on a bicycle and ride 500 miles in 5 days? I mean, that just seems nutty to me. I mean, it might be fun, but is there a point about halfway through when you think, why did I do this? Anybody, just jump in with that.
You know, it's kind of been a bucket list item for me. It's something I've always wanted to do and never really had the opportunity. My involvement with the Illinois Arborist Association, our mission is to foster interest, establish standards, exchange professional ideas, and pursue scientific research in arboriculture. We've supported the Tree Fund for many, many years, we've chosen to send our contributions for research and education in urban forestry to the Tree Fund, and hundreds of thousands of dollars over several years. It was a great opportunity for me to give back to our organization and check off a bucket list item. And fortunately, with Greg and Pam joining me, that really kind of helped, even though it got a little hard to sit down by the third or fourth day.
But aren't you supposed to do training so that you put the calluses on your butt before you go on the road?
We actually, Greg, Pam, and I hooked up with a trainer in January. And fortunately, we were working with somebody for about 6-7 months to have a hope of getting through this. And I think if we hadn't done that, it would have been a lot worse. But it really made a difference for us.
I was last week, took a couple of days just to go to Michigan, southwestern Michigan, and
did you ride your bike?
I brought my bike.
To and Michigan?
To Michigan. And rode around some of the country the roads there. And after about 7 or 8 miles, I was, you know, ready to take a nap. And I was thinking, wow, just add a 497 to this, and or 93, and I'll be fine. I don't know how much I rode, but you'd really have to do some training. John, actually, you mentioned to me when we were in Kewaunee that you thought maybe you should have trained a little more.
Yeah, I should have.
Busted!
I am disappointed with my performance.
To say the least.
However, I did ride every day.
This is not church. This is not confession.
Well,
okay?
That's all right. You know, I had gotten up to probably about 14, 15 miles an hour, which would be, you know, okay if you weren't doing 550 miles with 100-mile days in there. The heat was probably my downfall the most because when it gets hot, I kind of tend to melt.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been since I've been a kid.
Yeah.
I've always had problems with the heat. But no, I could have probably gotten my average speed up to 18 to 20 miles an hour during my training, which really would have helped me out considerably.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I got a little reward there the last night. It was for the vintage bike.
Your bike was classic.
Yes, it really
so
is.
You really needed something a little more aerodynamic, or
maybe a few more gears would have been useful.
I still.
Oh, he had the bike with one gear. Was that it?
Well, not quite. half as many as everybody else. I still ride a 10-speed, which I have since 1974.
And everybody else has got 21.
Yeah,
at gears. Least
20,
at
21.
Least.
Yeah.
34 gears, 57 gears, whatever you need, right?
Well, in John's defense, he spent an afternoon riding with me, making sure that I did not get run over by buses or anything. And there was a lot of melting going on in this tour. The heat was fierce. There was a lot of humidity. I think that the people that ride this tour, they're not professional cyclists. You have to keep in mind that these are all just people who are more passionate about trees than anything else.
And that's the great thing, is that they're willing to sacrifice their bodies for trees. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. Jim, how about you? How did you hold up?
Yeah, I'm feeling like I'm back on the tour. I've been back in the pace lane here, and you guys have been pushing for me all morning, and now it's my time.
It's your turn.
I've been sucking wheel all morning. It's my time to actually step up and say something. Huh?
It is, and I will ask you to talk in a second about the ISA, but how was your experience on the bicycle?
It was an amazing experience for me. I'd kind of put off being on this thing because of my position with ISA. We have a board meeting in the middle of the tour to trees every year, so it was pretty difficult for me to even think about doing it, but finally talked everybody into letting me do it, and it was an amazing thing. I was able to do the first, I think I did the first 5 days, which is about, I ended up doing 450 miles. That's not how many we're supposed to, Mike. I got lost a few times, but anyways, I ended up doing 450, and then my daughter came in on the last day and rode 105 miles for me to take my place. So it was a great thing. And the thing that was wonderful is that the group welcomed her as much as they did me, and we both had a great time and raised some money for research and also raised some awareness, and even got to climb a tree at one point in time in Kewaunee.
And I have a video of – is that a video of you going up that tree that I posted on Facebook?
I think John did as well.
Yeah, well, John went up there, but I got I think I have one of each. I didn't post both videos, but I posted the first person to go up it, and that was Jim.
Yeah, that was I was on the rafter. That's a little device that actually pulled you up in the tree. There were many times I wish I had that on my bike on some of the hills that we were riding.
Well, you know,
it was a great experience.
It's a great device. It's like a little motor that you hold on to, and it pulls you up the tree. With you know, you arrange the ropes so that the motor pulls the ropes. And I didn't realize until after I had posted the video, Scott Jameson from Bartlett wrote a response and said that's state-of-the-art technology. And John, you used that. You went up the. See, there's where you made good, John Kirchner, is that you went up in the tree. Only three of the cyclists went up in the tree, and you were one of them. Were you proving something, pal?
No, it's just that I haven't done it in a long time, and I thought it would be something that nobody else raised their hand.
Well, you know,
it was you or me. I voted for you.
Guy Sternberg kept telling me, "Oh, you want to go up in that tree, right?" I said, "Yeah, right." Like I know anything about. I'm not a professional. I just play one on the radio, and that was not one thing that I was going to try. And if you want to see the video of this, it's very cool, the technology involved. You can go to my website, MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show, and under the 2010 Steel Tour de Trees Reunion heading, I have posted the link to the Facebook page where you can see it, and it's really awesome. You know, so now instead of hooks and whatever you guys did and pulling yourself with the rope, you can get the machine to power you up. That's as Todd Jacobson from the Morton Arboretum wrote on it. He said, that's cheating.
That's right.
It is. But it's great technology. I imagine it helps you get your work done faster. Jim, what do you think?
Oh, absolutely, particularly for old farts like myself. We can, you know, get up the tree a little bit easier and get at the top and not be winded by when you do. So, it's yeah, it's amazing technology, and I think you're going to see more and more of that out in the field. Right now, there's not many out in use, and guys got one of the few, but yeah, I think you're going to start seeing more and more of that down the road. It is actually a safer way to ascend as well.
It seems like it would be. I'm talking to the folks from the Tour de Trees, the 2010 Steel Tour de Trees, which ran about 3 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago, whatever it was. But we're going to get to some tree discussion here. Real, you know, this is. I got to have some information on the show. It just can't all be fun and games. But before we do that, and by the way, the number is 773-838-9278. 773-838-WCPT. If you got a question about your tree, we got some real arborists in the studio, and perhaps they can help you. Before we get to that, I want everybody's memory of their best moment on the tour, in the whole week of the tour. And the start doesn't count because I was there. You know, that's not fair. It's the. Well, and also you weren't tired yet. No, just anybody, any great particular memories from the tour that you'd like to mention? Go ahead, Pam.
Oh, okay. Well, okay, you said I couldn't mention the start, but I'm sorry, the lakefront ride, just the whole group being together in the beginning and taking off from Millennium Park and that just the vision of it in my mind, it was just incredible.
You're getting a lot of nods here,
that,
yeah.
After that day, Greg and I were, and Mark at times, were hardly with the whole group. So that was a very memorable moment, being with everyone. All the same jerseys and helmets and
it was a spectacular sight, and I mentioned it's amazing that you can get that many people in one place to wear orange. And you did. But you bring up a good point, Pam, which is, do people actually get lost? I can see it happening because I got lost trying to find you guys in Geneseo. I was going to meet you in Geneseo, and then I couldn't find where the place was, and so I just headed over to Kewaunee.
Well, yes, actually, one moment in time that was one of my least favorable moments was when I passed the same farmhouse for the fourth time on a country road in that 30-mile-hour wind.
But it was a beautiful farmhouse.
A lovely farmhouse.
It's very scenic.
Oh, no. That has to be so frustrating.
Oh, that was experience being turned around out there in the country and not knowing whether you were headed to Peoria or Princeton.
And the thing is, you know, unlike when you're in a car, you just go to the next road and, well, you, first you turn on the GPS, and then you just go to the next road and look for a sign. But when you're on a bicycle, it takes you a lot longer to get to the next road.
Well, and Greg did have GPS, but it didn't mention that the next road was going to be gravel, so.
Hey, nice job, Greg. Were you, like, against her the whole time? Is that what was going on?
There were a couple other people that decided that we would ignore what the GPS said when I announced that it was telling us we were on the wrong road, which it did. And then what we were following were the marks on the road, where the trail was actually marked.
Uh-huh.
Except it was the road that was going to take us to Peoria, which was more for the advanced riders. And after we'd put a few miles up and down the hills, we realized that we were not going to go to Peoria, so we had to turn around again.
And then go back up and down the hills?
And that was the day that we actually did 106 miles in the 30 to 40-mile-an-hour winds.
Well, congratulations. You scored a century.
That's
an accomplishment.
That was
a
big accomplishment.
Yeah, you weren't supposed to do 106 or whatever you
said. Well, there was a lot of that going around. We had a lot of people that scored centuries, whether they intended to or not. But that's part of the tour. When you put 70 people out on the road, and some of them have limited experience with a large group, and we're not all traveling in a pack. You know, if you're visualizing this and you're thinking, here comes 70 people, you know, wall to wall down this road, that's not true at all.
And how many tires give out during the course of this? How often, you know?
Well, we had stretches where the road was less than wonderful, and we had blowouts. But we have a strong support crew that rides with the tour, too. These folks aren't out on the road on their own. We had seven vans.
Yeah, I know you have six or seven vans, but given the different skill levels of the people, I imagine the tour stretches out, and some are way up and some are way back. And if you're isolated somewhere in the middle, you could make a wrong turn at Albuquerque, right?
True. But most of us, I think everybody there had a cell phone, and everybody there had a list of support people to call. So if you ended up turned around, then you certainly were not on your own. You could call somebody, and we sent out the cavalry a couple of times, and a lot of herding of errant adventurers. And we brought everybody home at the end of the day. That was probably
true.
Yeah, everybody made it back.
That's absolutely true. They never left us. If we were the last ones in, there was always somebody making sure that we were okay. I mean, the support was wonderful.
Yeah, we kept track of everybody. And that was probably, you know, the end of the day for me. Watching was quite often Dave Leonard and Beth Buchanan. Beth is a new rider. She was a rookie this year. And she had never done anything like this before, and it was really beyond her skill level. Mm-hmm. But she's worked for the Davy Tree Expert Company for years. She was somebody that really believed firmly in the value of the research and the value of what the Tour de Trees is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, okay, this is my year. She had retired from full-time work with Davy, and she said, I'm going to do this. And Dave kind of mentored her through it. He's done 14 tours, I think, he and Andy Kitsley have been doing this since.
And they were on
God
the show on
trees.
The 18th, yes.
Yes, they were. So Dave made sure that Beth made it to the end of the day every day, and that was, to me, that was like this big triumphant moment to see those two come rolling into the parking lot at the end of the day, because they were people that this was really a challenge for.
Well, congratulations to everybody, and Pam says it best. She said, well, everybody got back, as if there was danger of that not happening, you know.
But I think the night in Princeton that the trolley driver kidnapped us, I had some questions about whether any of us were going to get back from that.
Well, that sounds like a story that we're going to talk about at the bar afterward, right? Is that?
We ended up at the bar, actually.
the trolley driver kidnapped you, huh?
Yeah, he was a great guy. Steve Sidek owned a trolley, decided that he wanted to be part of the event when the Tour de Trees rolled into Princeton. And he provided transportation for us between the hotels and the restaurant, and asked at the end of the dinner on the Thursday night, I guess it was, and he said, who wants to go for a ride in the trolley? I got to go back to the motel. So some of us unsuspecting souls piled into his trolley and got an unscheduled tour of Princeton. He took us all over the place, showed us the architecture, took him to his house, gave us a tour of his gardens.
And all you were thinking is, I just want to sleep, right?
No, absolutely. It was a blast.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad it was good. Well, listen, we're going to start the serious portion of this. And you're still welcome to bring in memories as we go along. But we got a caller, Janet, from Oswego, who's on line 3. Janet, are you with me?
Hello?
Hi, Janet.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, I'm so glad. Thank you for being patient and hanging on. What's your question for the arborists?
It's
I'm a second party. The lady that brought them to me is here, has just arrived. They're on a evergreen tree, and they look like, she thought it was little things that belong on the tree, little brown things like little cones. They're about 1 1/4 inches long and 1/2 inch wide. They look like pieces of needles stick together, brown, and there's a worm inside. It peeks his head out.
There's a little worm
that's inside. I got them in a plastic bag. I don't want them getting out.
Uh-huh.
They're all over the tree, and I could let you talk to her. She's the one that saw them. See, we live in nearby towns.
Oh, okay.
And they...
Does she come over to your house to listen to my show? Is that what goes on here?
No, she's a care person for my husband.
Oh, okay.
So she comes in at 9:30. So she was a little bit late this morning. But I said, I'm talking on the radio about your tree. It's not her property. She lives... In a apartment complex. So she told it to management, and Pam, didn't somebody come out, like an Orkin person? Would that be the right person to have a look at them? They didn't seem to...
They're more... Orkin is not usually a tree care. They're more for indoor stuff protecting your house. But Mark seems to have, is ready up with a comment here. Go ahead, Mark.
It sounds like you have bagworm. It's very common on conifers.
How do you spell it?
B-A-G.
Just like bag. Okay.
Bagworm.
Oh,
right.
Bag. Okay.
And,
bag, right.
They will encapsulate themselves with some of the old needles and webbing.
Right.
And so they'll be, you know, 1 1/2, 2 inch long, kind of pendulous hanging from the branches.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest if you call a local certified arborist, they can give you some treatment options. It's something that you can manage.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If you got it in the tree, it's a tree problem. And you go to an arborist and you get them to diagnose. Or you can go to your extension service.
Okay, yeah.
And have them, or sometimes you could take that sample that you have, you could go to a good independent garden center and say, hey, I found this in the tree. What do you think we got? That's what I would do before I go calling the Orkin man.
She's a renter, so she would go to management of her.
Well, then she goes to management first. Yes, I know. You got to go to the council first and make sure that.
I didn't want to open the bags because I have Colorado blue spruce, and I don't want those things on my. Are they just on certain evergreen trees or all?
You'll find them on many types. But if you...
I don't want them on mine.
You won't have to worry about them on your blue spruce.
She says the needles are, like, disappearing off the tree or something.
They will rest in the bag itself and then come out each day to feed on the needles of the tree. So they'll slowly defoliate the tree.
It's in danger of killing the tree? Could do that?
Unless the population really builds up to a large quantity, it'll take a few years to do that. So they'll have time to get somebody out to take a look at it.
Okay.
You know, there's two that I always get confused. There's webworm and there's bagworm, and one of them I know is more ornamental and not a serious problem to the tree, and the other one's more serious problem to the tree, right? Is that right?
Okay. Well, you'll get eastern tent caterpillar usually in the spring on crabs and ornamentals. Then there'll be fall webworm, which will be you'll see it on elm trees, on deciduous.
And fall webworm, that's the one I guess I'm thinking of, where because it's in the fall, the tree's going to lose its leaves anyway. And
it's not as serious.
Mm-hmm. But bagworm is a little more serious.
Okay.
It's not usually, it's more aesthetic, but it can, over successive years, weaken the tree and cause stress to the tree.
Okay.
So you might, Janet, get an arborist out there to take your friend get an arborist.
Okay.
All right, thank you for calling so much. You have a great day now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Pam and Jim, you still there?
Yes.
Did you want to add anything, Jim, to that?
I just, if you want a favorite moment, I was during one of my...
No, I was going to ask you about bagworm, but go ahead. Give me a favorite moment.
Favorite moment was the times I was lost somewhere between Kewaunee and Princeton. I went against my male nature and asked for directions from a couple of kids that were riding by in a souped up car. And I said, I need to find Princeton. Where is it? They said, dude, you know how far away that is from here? I go, yeah, I think it should be about 30 or 40 miles. They said, yeah. How are you going to get there? I go, on this bike. They go, shook their head and they said, you need to go that way.
Dude, you know how far that is? What is that thing you that with the wheels on, that you're sitting on there? I've never seen one of those before.
Yeah.
That's a good story. What about bagworm?
What about bagworms? We have them here as well. As soon as she said it, again, it's...
And where's here, Jim?
I'm in Champaign, Illinois.
Okay. All right, you got the bagworms bad?
We've got them fairly prevalent down here, but yeah. You control them with a number of different methods. My neighbor's actually got them. He's always complaining about them, but he seems to got them under control now that I gave him a couple ideas on how to do it.
And that's why you go to a certified arborist to find out how to take care of these problems. All right, well, you guys are going to all appreciate this because I'm going to give you a tip from the care of trees. Well, you guys in the room know this already, but people listening might not. Though we wish it were otherwise, the economy isn't getting much better lately. And you're going to hear landscapers say, don't worry, I do tree care. And you're going to be tempted to hire them to save a couple of nickels. But before you do, here's what you ask them. Are you a trained, educated, and certified tree professional? That's what you'll get with the care of trees. They are trained in up-to-date technologies and techniques and use safe work practices. I watched them personally work on a job for a client of mine this year. The guys came out from the care of trees. We had a consultation. They worked with me. We were pruning a honey locust, and you know the client had wanted it trimmed, but not too much because it screened some of the neighbors. So you know you got to do it exactly right. And they were great, and they worked with me. I can attest to their work standards. Can you say that about Joe the landscaper? Make the care of trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the care of trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The care of trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Hey gardeners, want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Are you a... Yeah, we'll get it in, Mary. We'll get it. Mary's always on me. She says, we got to talk about the tree fund. Don't forget the tree fund. The tree fund is a big deal. And we'll get to that in just a second. Okay? Everybody cool? I'm sorry. I am being nasty. Are you a savvy gardener? If you are, you know that late summer is the time to get the greatest bargains for your yard. And this is Savvy Gardener Time at SIDS Greenhouses and Garden Center in Palos Hills in Bolingbrook. That's because their annual sidewalk clearance sale is this Friday and Saturday, August 13th and 14th, starting at 8 o'clock a.m. each day. It doesn't cost anything to get in, and you'll save up to 70% and more on discounted, overstocked, and end-of-season items. Quantities are limited while supplies last. No pre-sale. Sales, no sales to dealers, just good, hard-working gardeners. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassard Boulevard. For hours and directions, visit SIDSonline.com. And remember, when you're done planting, bring your cell packs, grower pots, and other plastic containers to SIDS for recycling, or pick up donated pots for use in your home garden. And if you're a gardener, you know about NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, the essential nutrients for plants. At Dr. Earth, their nitrogen is from fish meal, cottonseed meal, alfalfa meal, fishbone meal, and feather meal. Their phosphorus is partially derived from soft rock phosphate, which you're just not going to find in other products. The potassium is also from natural sources. Then Dr. Earth adds their special probiotics. Dr. Earth is available only at your local independent garden center or go to drearth.com to find a dealer near you. We are in the home stretch of the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk. Mighty House is at 10 o'clock. Don't forget you can check out a podcast of this program by going to MikeNovak.net. I post them usually by the end of the day on Sunday. We've got the Tour de Trees people here in the studio. Mary, what about the tree fund? How come we haven't talked about the tree fund on this show?
I don't know. We were having too much fun talking about other stuff.
Well, tell me about the tree fund, because actually this is why all of this is done. That's why cyclists raise all this money and then they go out for 500 miles and why you have benefits and so forth. What kind of great work is the Tree Fund doing?
Well, the whole point of the Tour de Trees is to raise money for research. I mean, it's as much fun as it is to go out and ride your bike in the middle of July, 500 miles in Illinois. There really is a bigger purpose to all of this. And the Tree Fund takes the money that we raise from these riders and uses it to apply to research. We grant, well, this year we gave out $93,000 in Highland Johns grants to 10 different researchers. Excuse me, those were dueling grants. But we've got people that are studying all kinds of different things. We gave research money to people this year that are doing working on ground-penetrating radar, systemic fungicides in palm trees, different planting methods, propagation methods, pruning methods. I think Mark could probably talk to a lot of this, in that the money that we raise for research is then directly applied to the arborists that are out there in the field. The whole point of the Tree Fund and the Tour de Trees is to make sure that the arboriculture industry is constantly infused with new information. The pests and the diseases and the challenges that face trees living in urban environments are constantly evolving. And if the information and the techniques aren't evolving in pace with that, then eventually our trees are going to die out. And if the trees die out, well, there's
well,
not,
and,
not
and
much
they're
hope
under
the rest of us.
Attack from so many things right now. I mean,
there's a lot going on out there.
Sudden death, the oak trees with that, and
the emerald ash borer.
Asian longhorn beetle is not gone away completely, even though, as I said on the show on the 18th, it's big and stupid and slow moving, but it still can wreak havoc. And then we've got, what is this thousand canker disease that's now showing up in Tennessee? I'll tell you what, let's go to Jim and let him talk about that for a second. Jim?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't have the details on it.
Oh, okay. Anybody in the room got the details on this? Because I can, I had, well, I...
Is that the walnut?
Yeah, it is a black walnut tree. And I'm sorry, I caught you off guard. I just, you know...
Well, let's talk a little bit about the emerald ash borer then while you figure out what's going on with
the canker. Yeah, because I know, I've got the, I'll find that in a second. Go ahead, yeah, emerald ash borer. What are we doing about that? Because do I still tell people when they call on my show that... You know, in 10 years, there's going to be 20% or 40% fewer ash trees in Illinois. What's the prognosis for that?
The prognosis is not good. I know we've lost over 20 million ash trees in the country since it was discovered in early 2002. We're dealing with it. I know John Kirshner is dealing with it in Chicago. It was discovered in Illinois in 2007. Evanston has about 4,000 public ash trees, and we're up to a couple thousand trees. So I think over probably next 3 or 4 years, we're probably going to lose most of our ash, all of our ash, unless somebody treats them preventatively. And I know that research has come along now, finally, with a few products that are very effective, the treatments that have to be done regularly. But if people are interested in trying to preserve their trees, there's options now available.
There are, but, you know, some of those are not cheap. And if you've got the money to do this, that's one thing. But when you're talking about a forest of ash trees, it's prohibitive, isn't it? Go ahead, John.
Well, in Chicago, we have well over 500,000 trees, and that's just parkway trees. That doesn't include our backyards. It doesn't include all the parks and everything else.
You're saying trees in general or ash trees?
Trees in general.
Yeah.
But 20% of all of, unfortunately, all of our street trees happen to be ash of one, you know, green ash, white ash. And it's just, we have lost a number of trees so far. We keep finding it in spots here throughout Illinois. We do have a bit of a treatment plan that we are working on, primarily in the northern part of the city where it's closest, unfortunately, Mark, to Evanston. But we are treating our trees up there. It is costly. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of effort. And in these budget times, it does take money.
Well, I think one of the hopes with research is that eventually we'll create a breed of ash tree that's resistant to emerald ash borer. And there is there's a researcher that received a $25,000 grant from the Tree Fund last year. His name is Daniel Herms, and he's working on a stand of trees in Ohio. He's calling them lingering ash trees. The emerald ash borers went through that area, wiped out virtually everything except for a small grove of trees that somehow is hanging on.
So, and you got to find out why those exactly. are hanging on, and that's the secret to
and
that.
And that's what we do. That's what we're looking to accomplish.
And I'd be remiss, Jim, if I didn't let you get in a few words about the ISA which is the International Society of Arboriculture. How do you pronounce that? Arboriculture, arboriculture.
Depends on where you're from.
Yeah. Okay.
We say arboriculture here.
So just arboriculture.
We drop the I.
The I is silent.
Okay.
The I is silent. The International
Society. There is no I in arboriculture.
That's right.
That's your new slogan.
I'll write that down. I'll put it by the board and see if they're up for that one.
It's a team sport.
The thing with the ISA. ISA is the certifying body for people in the profession of arboriculture, and we have the ISA Certified Arborist Program. That's why we always recommend those people because they have been tested and have demonstrated a knowledge of tree care and different applications. And it's a global certification program, and we now have people in 47 different countries that have been certified, about 25,000 people worldwide. And they work closely with the Tree Fund, and we very much rely on the research that comes from the Tree Fund and from the donations that come through the annual ride to improve tree care for people around the world.
With that, we've just about come to the end of the program. So here's the plan. We're going to have another reunion in 2 weeks, all right? Everybody come back. I'm kidding.
I'm on vacation.
I mean, Mary's looking at me like, I can't be here. No. Maybe in a year we'll do this when we have the next ride. I want to thank all the people from the 2010 Steel Tour de Trees. On the phone, Pam Pinkley and Jim Skira. In the studio, Mary DiCarlo, Mark Younger, Greg Kedju, and John Kirchner. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to find out that information on the milkweed bug and how to treat it by next week so that folks know that, and I'm giving you the straight skinny. I'll probably talk to Wally at Pesci's and maybe do a little more. Mr. Brown Thumb has an article up on there, and I'll get a link to that and make sure that I got the right information because I don't, you know, the last thing I want to do is do something on the fly. Oh, you're still accepting donations. And this just in from Mary DiCarlo. Mary DiCarlo! Go to steeltourdetrees.org. You could probably go to treefund.org, too.
You could.
Yeah, either way. And
we are still raising money for tree care.
Still raising money for tree care. All right, on that note, I'm going to say goodbye because Mighty House is up next with Ron Cowgill and Joe Builder. See you next week.